रामाय रामभद्राय रामचंद्राय वेदसे रघुनाथाय नाथाय सीतायाः पते नमः। बालकांड चैप्टर 2 हाउ वाल्मीकि केम टू कंपोज द रामायण द रेसिटेशन बिगिंस। ही सीज्ड and Valmiki, the soul of righteousness, listened in awe and reverence. Himself a speaker of no mean ability, he spoke to Narada out of a full heart. O thou of inscrutable might, well hast thou spoken and marvelously. And his disciples were not behind him in their glowing praises of the divine sage. Later on, when Narada rose to go, Valmiki offered unto him reverent worship. Have I your leave to go? Said Narad. As my lord willeth, said the grateful host, and the wise one resumed his aerial course towards the heavenly spheres. Valmiki spent an hour or two in his cottage after his guests left it, his thoughts absorbed in the eventful conversation of the morn. All at once he found that it was high time for the midday bath and started for the lovely Tamasa, not far remote from the Ganga. The crystal waters of the murmuring brook caught his heart, and turning to the faithful disciple that waited upon him, he exclaimed, Seest thou yon stream, Bharadwaja, the pebbly beach, carpeted with soft sand right up to the water's edge, with pleasant fords and neat. The smooth, pellucid waters remind me of the hearts of good men, calm and unruffled. This is a pure spot and holy. Put down thy water jar here and hand me my bathing dress of bark, for here will I bathe. True, the sacred Ganga is not far off, but Tamsa is so charming today, and I fear we are already behind time for the midday prayers. The disciple bowed in reverent assent, and with his ready hand offered unto his master his dress of bark, for he regarded himself as supremely blessed in being allowed to serve the Holy One. Valmiki took it from him and, with the senses under restraint, penetrated into the dark woods around, seeking for a suitable spot to bathe and meditate upon the Supreme Lord. Not far from him, a pair of croucher birds, cock and hen, were disporting themselves merrily in the best of health and spirits, singing sweetly the while. All at once a nishada, a fowler, the relentless foe of every innocent bird and beast, sent his arrow right into the heart of the cock, all ignoring the presence of the holy sage who was looking on. Down fell the fated bird at the feet, as it were, of the horrified Valmiki and wallowed in its lifeblood. The crest of golden hue and wings outspread, it was taken all unawares, mad with love and in the very act of enjoying itself with its wife. And at the sight of her lord and love now rolling in the dust in the agonies of death, the wretched hen shrieked a long and bitter cry, rendered all the more so in that the flames of her love were as yet unquenched. Valmiki, the soul of boundless compassion and justice, was filled with indescribable pity towards the poor hen, now hopelessly disconsolate. A cruel act this, and unnatural, cried he, even for a hardened hunter. How could one have the heart to strike to death a poor bird, and that in the sweet embraces of love, with the fervent kisses of its mate still warm on its lips? The poor victim before his eyes roused the self-contained sage to ungovernable wrath, and from his unconscious lips shot forth a mighty curse. Hapless wretch! Mayst thou for long years to come never find a spot in this wide world to rest thy weary head. Didst thou not slay a lovely and harmless croucher bird that was blind with passion in the very arms of his love? Thus spoke and paused a dire misgiving came over his heart, and he said to himself, "Passing strange, how come I, of subdued passions and serene heart, to speak words of such dread import that rob me of my hard-earned spiritual might?" But even as he brooded over it, a light broke upon his mind, and he exclaimed to Bharadwaja, "My heart was now wrung with pity and grief at the miserable fate that overtook the poor bird. When these wild words of doom broke out of my unconscious lips, but lo, they arranged in equal lines of even feet, perfect and flawless, admirably adapted to be sung or played. Well, this shall confer undying fame on me, and never shall it prove otherwise." Bharadwaja listened to him in awe and wonder. The holy sage, whose powers for good and evil were almost boundless, and softly repeated the words to himself, whereat his master was mightily pleased. Then Valmiki had his long-delayed bath and went through his prayers. All slowly he wended his way back to the hermitage, his thoughts still engrossed with his prophetic words, the marvelous words that rose unbidden to his lips and bore a terrible curse in its bosom. Bharadwaja, profoundly learned yet lowly of heart, followed him at humble distance with a water jar on his shoulders, the pitcher brimming over with the fresh waters of the rill. Soon they reached the hermitage, and the master discoursed to his disciples a while on themes high and holy, but his thoughts were far away and with his utterance of the morning. Then there came unto him in his calm retreat the four-faced one, Brahma, the father of the earth and the skies, the supreme ruler and the fashioner of the material world. True, he could from his seat on high cause the holy record of Rama's deeds to reach the ears and the hearts of men, but for certain reasons of his own he chose the highly fortunate Valmiki as a fitting instrument of the grand service to the future devotees of the Lord. Up sprang Valmiki in wondering awe to welcome his divine guest with radiant presence, laid his head at his feet, and duly offered unto him the rites of hospitality in all humility and reverence. The Great One accepted the seat of honor offered to him, made kind inquiries about the welfare of his host, and bade him sit nigh, which he did. But Valmiki's thoughts ever ran upon the strange events of the day. "Alas," he said to himself, "how did the wretch bring himself to harm the innocent beings, so sweet of voice and so entirely absorbed in the love as to be oblivious to everything around? He shrank not from the cruel deed and had caused me to lose my temper and commit an act of folly that had robbed me of my hard-won merit." And he went on unconsciously repeating to himself the strange words that escaped his lips that eventful morn. A curious smile lit upon the features of Brahma, a smile of kindly pity in that the sage had not yet divined the source of his inspiration. "Know ye not," said Brahma in accents of liquid melody, "that it was at my direction that Saraswati, the goddess of speech, uttered through your lips the seeming curse? The words that caused your innocent heart a world of anxiety should bring unto you boundless fame. Doubt no more, but give unto the world the story of Rama, even as you have heard it from my son Narada. What nobler subject for your poem than Sri Ramachandra, the divine hero, the soul of righteousness, the perfect embodiment of all that is good and great, and the director of men's thoughts, words, deeds, in the light of the karma? Nothing that relates to any of the actors in thy great world drama shall escape thy all-seeing eye. Rama, Lakshmana, Sita, the men and monkeys, gods and rakshasas, their acts, their words, nay, even their very thoughts shall not be a secret to you." Nothing that comes out of your mouth, consciously or otherwise, shall prove other than true. Sing thou a poem that shall charm away the hearts of men, perfect in its rhythm and melodious in its flow. The cloud-capped mountains, the swift-coursing rivers, and all created beings shall pass away and be as naught. But your noble song shall outlive them and never fade from the hearts of men. And as long as a record of Rama's life holds sway over the hearts of men, so long shall you sit by me in my highest heaven. He spoke and was seen no more amongst them. The sage sat still in hushed awe and silent amaze, and his disciples along with him. Then all at once they broke forth into melodious song, reciting again and again the sweet words, Manishada, perfect in rhythm and faultless in meter. And so sung and recited by those disciples of his, gone gray in sacred lore, its fame grew apace in the world of men. Now, said Valmiki, shall I sing the life of Rama? Yes, the whole of it, in such verses as these. Long and deeply did he ponder over it and gave to a grateful world the grand epic. Sung in diverse measures of even feet and accents, grand in its style and chaste and polished in its diction, simple yet profoundly suggestive, the mighty genius of the immortal Valmiki has preserved for all eternity the glorious deeds of the divine person, Sri Ramachandra, in countless verses as beautiful and perfect as the one that was spoken through his lips by the goddess of speech. Listen to the noble poem, The Fall of Ravana, sung by the holy sage who gave unto posterity the life of the noblest of all, Raghava. No defect of style or idiom, grammar or diction mars his perfect beauty. Sweet and melodious of flow, the sound is a perfect echo to the sense. Mangalam Koshalendraya Mahaniya Gunabdiye Chakravarti Dhanurjaya Sarva Bhaumaya Mangalam.